Welcome to this special edition series, A Strategic View of Hiring, a series of discussions to help you think through and implement smarter and more impactful strategies to recruit and develop world-class talent for your organization. And now, here is our series host, Mr. Rick Thiemann.
All right, welcome back to the next segment of A Strategic View of Hiring. I am your host, Todd Schnick, joined by my friend and colleague, Rick Thiemann. Rick, good to see you again.
Yep, absolutely.
Looking forward to this conversation. This has been a wonderful series. It's made me realize all the things I have done wrong in this process over the years. And I suspect today's episode will be no different. Today, we're going to talk about establishing interview protocols. I can tell you, again, looking back at my career, Rick, I never established any kind of interview protocols.
I didn't either.
I suspect that's a common tale.
It was for me back then. Many of my clients I work with, it's still prevalent today. It's the wing it syndrome.
So. Yeah. So what we're actually going to do, you've created an actual interview guide that we're going to go through step by step. But before we go there, why should we establish interview protocols? What's the point?
Number one thing is, I guess, consistency. Number two is, so I don't forget to ask something I should have asked. And so having some type of outline that kind of guides me and puts things in an order that's consistent, so that I'm interviewing everybody based on the same set of criteria and the same format. So if I'm going to interview, let's say I've got my top five candidates and I'm going to interview all five, I'm adding consistency to each of those candidates by having a format that I use that follows along the same format for each candidate. So I'm comparing apples to apples, and I'm not getting off on the different tangents.
Yeah, that makes all the sense in the world when you think about it. And looking back again, I never did that. And it's no wonder that people spend such time and expense having to hire someone new and go through that process again and bring on someone that doesn't work out. And it's expensive and time-consuming to onboard a new person and train them again. I mean, and you could avoid a lot of those pitfalls by listening to the things we've talked about in this series of A Strategic View of Hiring. So,
well, and this is different. You can use a person's resume to enter off of, but you're more likely to wind up bouncing around in that resume than you are using some type of format that ties you to a strategic element of the outcome of what that resume is trying to tell you. And this outline I have created here helps you follow and make sure that you uncover everything that you need to uncover, and even then some probably, through having more of an interview guide, which is what we call this, is an interview guide.
Yeah. And so the guide that we're actually going to walk through today, and this is part one of two, this will be a two-part conversation on establishing interview protocols. This gives you a general sense of what an interview guide can look like. Obviously, you can customize should you have a very specific role with very specific requirements.
Right. So we have a different, in other words, this one follows as a general rule for most office types of jobs or sales jobs or managerial positions. And we have different interview formats we've created with actually scoring sheets for shop floor personnel or people working in a, let's say, technicians. We've created a specific one hiring technicians that ties in their technical ability and things of that nature. So this one, as a general rule, is kind of our core outline that we use. We've modified that for other clients for other positions.
All right. So let's get into it. How do you start? What's the first step in this guide?
Well, it starts out, believe it or not, in a very simple format. And it starts by asking the beginning and ending dates of the company they work for.
All right. Why does that matter?
Well, because more often than not, when people bring in a resume, sometimes they fill out Induit or Intuit or Indeed or whatever. And there may or may not be room on there. But a lot of times what you find in resumes or people that will fill out a company application form, they'll say, see resume, instead of actually filling it out, you wind up getting perhaps a year-to-year date. So like 2018, I worked for IBM from 2018 to 2020, right? You'd think, okay, that's 3 years, 2018, 2019, 2020. Well, no, not really, because if the person started in January of 2018 and worked all the way through December of 2020, that's a full three-year gig.
Oh, I see what you're saying.
Right? But if they didn't start until December of 2018 and they left in January of 2020, that's a little more than a year.
It's right? Very different.
Yeah, right. So if it's not fully stated on somebody's resume or company application form, you leave a lot of things to chance or you wind up assuming, if you will, a lot of things. Okay.
Yeah, that's how someone would hide gaps.
Exactly. Right. So this helps me make sure I set precedents in each of the, and I'm going to use this interview guide in at least three, or based on how long they've been in those jobs, but probably the last three jobs they've held, I'm going to use this interview guide because now it helps me make sure I position them from one job to the next with no gaps in a resume. So I want to just get confirmation, or even if nothing else, if there's that gap in the resume, I want to get confirmation of when they started and when they ended. So I lead right into that so I don't miss that piece, okay?
Yeah, because that kind of then helps you read between the lines too and get a better sense of yep. their actual history.
So the next point I take then is their title and position. And I want to know what the title and position was when they started and when they ended. Because again, by example, oftentimes you find in a resume, someone says, well, I was a senior project manager or senior project engineer. Okay, great. And they worked there for 5 years. Okay. But did they start out as a senior project engineer? Did they get promoted to that senior project engineer? Some people are really good about kind of layering each role that they've held. But sometimes people just lump it all into one. And my current job is my last data job. But that doesn't necessarily show me the progression. So oftentimes I will ask people, so do you know if that person actually started as a senior project engineer? And they'll go, well, I don't know. Well, did you ask? No, never thought to. So what this guide does, it helps you make sure you don't forget to ask key questions that gives you a real understanding about, so was that person promoted? Did they hire in and they were in that job for 10 years as senior project engineer, never got a promotion? Maybe they don't want another position. Maybe that's what they're like, right? So there's a lot of things that can tell us about just those two things right out of the get-go by making sure you ask those in the interview. Well, an outline helps make sure that you actually ask those questions versus, oh, hell, I forgot to ask that. Or, damn, I missed that. Or, why did I
think? Oh, no. They have this checklist, if you will. Is I understand the power of that. But thinking back to one of my resumes, I worked for an organization for 3 years, and all they did on the resume was list the highest rank I got. Yeah. Instead of talking about the progression. So right. You can see why you need to pull back the covers there and really kind of get the true picture.
Yeah. So the next piece that ties into, I want to ask beginning and ending wages. Now, just put people knowing that the state of California, you can't ask in the interview process about current or past wages. But all other states, to my knowledge, you know, you can. But I always look at beginning and ending wages. And I'll ask, so Todd, when you started there, what was your beginning salary? And also when you left, what was your ending salary? In other words, what I'm looking for is progression. I'm looking for, did they just get regular cost of living increases? Did they get some type of bonus and reward system? Were they on commission? If I'm looking at a sales position, did they earn commissions? Were they on straight salary? I'm looking kind of like, so how did they get paid, right? How did they earn their keep? And that can establish for me kind of the same protocol. Can I expect, are we in the same ballpark from a salary standpoint or from a bonus or commission standpoint? Does it make sense for them to leave the job they're in versus what I have to offer? Because what I've found is over the years is people don't typically want to move for less money. If they do, and they're willing to take a lateral move to get into a bigger company, they might take a cut in pay, but usually 15% is about the max that they're willing to take less than. So there's a lot to be said about understanding where they're at in terms of their income and what they're making currently and how that translates going forward. So those three things are things I get into real quick right up front. Now, you can change the order of that if you want. But again, it's making sure I do have all the questions I want to ask in some type of format.
Yeah, I mean, what we're trying to do here is help an organization make a good hire, someone who's going to make a long-term contribution to the organization. And getting that true picture at the very beginning is critical to making that smart hire. And so I'm beginning to understand why, because I never worried about what their beginning and end salary was. I wanted to know what they currently paid and, well, does it match my budget?
Yeah.
Well, I can understand why you'd want to learn the deeper picture there.
Yeah. And to your point, most people, that's really all they look at. But again, I tend to want to get as deep into the individual psyche and makeup and background as I possibly can. Because the reason that I might ask beginning and ending salary is, yeah, most people look at the ending salary, but I want to look at the beginning salary as well. And the reason I like that is because it shows me if they've been there for 5 years, that each year they got some type of merit increase other than just cost of living increase. Because if I'm getting a merit increase, guess what that tells me? They viewed this person as valuable.
Yep.
Now, the other piece of that is that if we get down to salary negotiations at the end, what's the likelihood of them going back to their company and saying, I'm looking at another job and here's what they're being paid. And then they match that. And all the time I've wasted is for naught because they just, because the company they're with gives them another merit increase to keep them. Mm-hmm. Okay. So there's something to be said about that piece. And we talk about that in the phone screen.
Yep.
In the section on the phone screen where we talk about expected wages, right? If they have another offer, if they're looking at another company, if they've had other interviews, those are important things to ask in the screening process on the pre-screen to help me make sure that when I'm now sitting down face-to-face on the interview piece, I've got a viable candidate and not somebody who may be looking to leave or has another offer somewhere else. Yep.
That's why that screen is so important. Now you get into understanding their expectations. What are you trying to get there?
So what I'm looking for is, if you look at all the different statistics that are out there, most people leave companies. They don't leave, they don't quit the job. They quit their manager.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. As I go through this, I'm looking for indications of why did they really leave, which I'm going to ask at the end. But expectations are, so what was it that you were promised when you took the job? In other words, what excited you about the job or the company, or what were the things, what were the reasons you took that job, and what kind of things did they promise you? Did those things pan out? So tell me about your expectations and if those were lived up to. So now I'm looking at, are they optimistic? Are they outgoing? Are they going to shoot the company down? Are they going to talk bad about the company? How will they present that in terms of expectations? Because the same thing applies when they come to my company.
Well, that's what this is really about. You want to understand how you can best work with them when they're in your organization.
That's correct, right? Because we know that behavior is the biggest predictor of performance. So how is their behavior? How are they wired? And we're going to get into that as we go through this. But expectations is an interesting thing, because a lot of people that I've seen over the years, they get disgruntled in the role that they're in, and all they want to do is get out, right? And so they jump ship. And now they find out that the ship they just jumped to is worse than the ship they just left. Well, did they do their homework? Did they do any research? Or did they just want to get out of the company they left so bad that they just took the next thing that came along?
Right.
Well,
right.
That tells me a little bit about their decision-making process.
Yes.
Right?
Yes.
So there's a lot to be said for kind of understanding expectations and kind of the role of...
I've also long believed, Rick, that a good boss is helping make better bosses and help people grow and learn, and understanding their expectations helps me do that.
Right.
So it's great stuff.
Yeah.
Next, you get into responsibilities, what their responsibilities were. So why is that important?
Well, okay. So responsibilities must translate into performance. For example, let's say an individual puts on their resume, I'm going to be facetious here, but let's say they put on a resume, improved office efficiency by 25%. Well, what does that mean? Does that mean they just moved the office cabinets for easily accessible and they bought a new coffee machine that was faster and, you know, they bought a computer that was faster? Is that what they did? I mean, what does that really mean, right? So how do you quantify what they put on their resume? So what I'm looking for is, do the responsibilities make sense? Did they actually do something with those responsibilities, which translates into their accomplishments? And what I'm looking for is what I would call proof of performance. How can they prove to me that, in fact, that the accomplishments that they said they achieved, given the responsibilities that they had, and how those correlate to what I want them to do, do they translate into some type of performance that goes above and beyond, let's say, the call of duty, so to speak?
Because what I think your typical person might do is, instead of listing accomplishments, they list their duties and what they did in terms of their day-to-day role, but they don't really share anything that they accomplished. I mean, that's important for you as a hiring manager to understand that, right?
So a lot of times you'll see a resume that just looks like a duties list.
Yeah.
Right? And that's fine, right? I mean, I want to know that the duties that they held are similar to the duties that I have, but did they go beyond that? In other words, did they go the extra mile? Did they work overtime when needed? Did they work overtime even when not asked, right? And those are the kinds of things we're looking for between responsibilities and accomplishments. But the other thing I want to find out about the accomplishments is that, you know, I think it's the more responsibilities I have, obviously the more I take on, but my accomplishments in terms of what I call proof of performance ties back to validating the reference session that we did. So I'm going to look at kind of the accomplishments that they claim they have achieved. Those will be my proof of performance when I go to check the references and validate the data that they provide.
Yeah. Well, and understanding their accomplishments is a key part of that for sure.
Right.
Now you want to get into what their mistakes were.
Let's call that lessons learned.
Because, okay, that makes sense.
Because a lot of people don't believe they make mistakes.
Okay. I mean, I never did, but I get others did.
Yeah. And so the lessons learned or mistakes is about, are they willing to be transparent? Are they willing to acknowledge that, yeah, you know, I probably screwed that one up, or yeah, I probably got sideways with my boss on that time around, but you know, here's what I learned. And so what I'm looking at is
maturity here.
Well, maturity, right? And admitting that they're not perfect, recognizing that, you know, here's some of the quirks I have that make me human, but as long as I understand what they are, I work past those. But can they be transparent with a degree of willingness to disclose? Because I'll say, look, if there's anything that winds up being in your past that's really uncomfortable to talk about, let's get that on the table now. Because I don't want to be blindsided if I get into checking your references and some of the things we're talking about here don't actually show to be as fruitful as what you're claiming them to be when I check references. So I'm looking to see how transparent that person is and their acknowledgement about what I call lessons learned.
Because they'll make other mistakes. And
absolutely.
You want to know, how is that relationship going to work when that happens? And it happens. We're humans. We make mistakes. Is it going to be a teaching moment, or is it going to be a very contentious situation, which you hopefully want to avoid? Now you want to dive into their most enjoyable moments and their least enjoyable moments. Why does that matter?
Well, because it ties back to behavior, believe it or not. And we know the behavior is the single biggest predictor of performance. If the job I'm doing doesn't seem like a job, meaning I really love what I'm doing, okay? Back to the kind of most enjoyable, right? Mm-hmm. If I really love what I'm doing, I'm going to probably do it to the best of my ability. But if I'm doing something I just don't like or doesn't fit me, so if I'm in a role that requires an extremely high attention to detail and I'm moderately detailed in my behavior, well, then guess what happens? That job over time is going to be a job that I probably may procrastinate with or get tired of or just get disgruntled with. So the most enjoyable thing helps me understand what is it that juices them, so to speak? What is it that really trips their trigger? What excites them? Because the more I find of the job that they like that excites them the most, guess how productive they're likely to be.
Or if they say, yeah, the least enjoyable part was all the time I spent on the road. Well, you've made application here for a traveling salesman. How is this going to actually work?
Yeah.
So these are the kind of things you're looking for.
Right. Mm-hmm. So my most and least enjoyable will, believe it or not, track back to a behavior, right, of something I like or don't like, hence the like, dislike, which ties back to my responsibilities and accomplishments. So the more I understand about kind of their behavior and how they're wired and what they really like, I can kind of get an idea of why they're not happy in the job they're in and why they're looking to leave, and how that might translate into the job that I'm looking to have for them to fill. And if there's any synergies behind that that might say, yeah, I might get them for 2 or 3 years, but outside of that, I can see where they could burn out or wear out in a job.
Yeah,
or whatever.
That makes sense. But also understanding their most enjoyable parts of their job or the least helps you be a better manager for them and helps you integrate them into your organization.
Yeah. But there's another reason we're asking this question, okay? Because as I mentioned at the top of our show here, is that you're going to use this format through the last 3 jobs at a minimum.
Mm, yep.
Okay. So another thing that comes out of this, believe it or not, is seeing the consistency of how that plays out in each job and the continuity between likes and dislikes between this job and the next job and the current job. So if I go back, if I use this format at least for 3 companies that they work for, I can do it more if I want, right? But that is really time consuming. But if I do it in the last 3 jobs, I get a pretty good history of kind of who they are and how they're wired. And if that's showing up the same way in each job, that's predictability then, right?
Yep.
If I'm getting different stories in each of the companies about likes and dislikes, now I start to have a little bit more caution, if you will, of what's going on.
Still the example, the playoff of what I mentioned earlier. If he liked travel in one job, but didn't like travel in another, that raises a flag for you to explore and look under the hood and better understand. All right, we're going to wrap part one with one final part of this interview guide, and that's seeking to understand their reasons for leaving. That's got to be probably a tricky conversation for some folks, and maybe even hard for interviewers to walk us through why that's so important in this.
So in our process, when we work with clients in using our assessment process, and we're doing a debrief for the client in terms of looking at their resume, looking at their test results, trying to identify kind of job fit, I'll often ask, you know, do you want to know why they left? And I can't tell you the number of times that people don't know why someone left the job. I don't know if it's because people are uncomfortable asking that question. My assumption is, from what I've gathered over the years, 30 years of doing this, is that people don't like to put people on the spot in the interview. Most interviews that I've seen are what I call service interviews. You ask a question, you get an answer, you move on to the next question, okay? Rather than kind of peeling back the onion and getting deeper. So why do I want to know the reason for leaving? Well, again, I mentioned that a lot of people leave their jobs because of their boss. But they also leave their job because of corporate culture. They leave their job because they think they're underpaid, or they leave their job because they got passed over, or they leave their job because they got riffed, right? Or they leave their job because they got fired, or there was a downsizing, okay? So all those reasons to me are important about why a person left, because I want to see, for example, if a person left the job and they said, well, we had a mutual parting of the ways. I can't tell you how many times I've heard that. What does that mean? It really means they got fired. Okay. It doesn't mean anything else, but right. I got fired, right?
Right.
But people kind of listen to that and go, oh, okay. Yeah, I understand. That happened to me. So for me, asking someone the reason that they left, I'm trying to understand if they left on their own or they were forced out. Again, I get back to the thing of behavior is the biggest predictor of performance, right? And I can't tell you the number of times I've seen people get fired because of their behavior. So we hire for experience, education, background, personal chemistry, right? But we fire for non-performance, not showing up for work, insubordination, being a difficult person to work with, having a temper, right? But we don't interview for those things. We interview for, you know, all the other stuff I just mentioned. So in that reason for leaving, is it a valid reason that they left, right? I had a better offer. Okay. Did you jump ship? How much better was the offer? I just didn't like the way the company was directed, was going. Okay. So tell me what happened. So I'm looking for the reasons behind that. Because again, if I do that, if I ask the reasons for leaving in this job and the previous two, I'm looking for a pattern. Is the pattern, I didn't like the way the organization was going in the last three companies? Well, guess what?
That tells you a lot.
It tells me a lot, right? So there's a lot to be said for reason for leaving. Now, I can't tell you how many times people, they've told me that they, you know, the individual, you know, got a severance package. And I immediately ask, so were they riffed? What was the reason for the severance package? I don't know. Well, it's because we don't ask.
Right.
So what this whole outline is designed to do is making sure I'm asking all the questions. It looks at how they're wired, their temperament, their likes or dislikes, their reason for leaving, their wages, their earnings, when they began, when they end. And if I do that in three successive jobs that they've held, I'm going to get a much better idea of how they're going to show up working for me.
Got it. All right. Well, that concludes part one of establishing interview protocols. We'll be back with the next episode on the final half of this interview guide. Rick, should anyone have any questions on what we've discussed so far, what's the best way to get in touch with you?
So our website is theeg.com. That's www.theeg or theeg.com, which is short for the executive group. They can also call the office at 219-477-6378, or they can email me at rick@theeg.com.
And if they want to get a copy of your book, Developing World-Class Leaders, The Ultimate Guide to Leadership Development, where do they go?
We're happy to send that one, a free copy to them if they want, or they can go directly to Amazon and pick it up through Amazon.com.
Outstanding. All right. Well, that concludes again part one of Establishing Interview Protocols, part of our series of A Strategic View of Hiring. On behalf of Rick Thiemann, I'm Todd Schnick. We'll see you again soon for part two of Establishing Interview Protocols. We'll see you soon.
Listening to the special edition series, A Strategic View of Hiring. This series is made possible by the Executive Group, linking human capital with strategic intent, building organizational talent, and developing both world-class leaders and sales force effectiveness. To learn more, visit the Executive Group online at theeg.com. That's theeg.com.